Well, on Easter Sunday, more than 300 people died in a series of shocking terror attacks in Sri Lanka, originally blamed on a local Muslimist group, but now almost certainly the work of ISIS. It was a highly coordinated and planned attack involving smuggled weapons and much secret communication. So how did the organisers avoid detection in a world of surveillance and paranoid border control? That's what I asked terror expert Professor Greg Barton.
That's the really big question. Ordinarily, this is not possible. We see very, very few of these really ambitious mass attacks. In the past, they're generally caught before they're executed. So most of the attacks we've seen in recent years have been lone actor attacks with one or two people either inspired or even directed by Islamic State, but not involving large communication. The key here appears to be two factors. One is the nature of the Sri Lankan context, where despite having 25 years of really brutal civil war finishing just a decade ago, the security apparatus was, as it were, fighting that last war. It was focused on the threat posed by the ethno nationalist group, the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, and didn't see a threat arising from within the 10% of the population who are Muslim. And indeed, in their defence, they hadn't presented any threat. There is no grievance between Sri Lankan Muslims and Sri Lankan Christians. Both were often the victim of persecution, and they had no particular fight with each other. Compounding that blinkeredness is the fact that we're just six months out from a constitutional crisis in Sri Lanka, in which the president tried to install the former president and prime minister, Rajapaksa, as the prime minister, was defeated in that by the prime minister. But that's led to a lot of ongoing bad blood between president and prime minister. The president's responsible for overseeing security. The prime minister and his ministers complain that they've not been included in security briefings. And the multiple security alerts provided to Sri Lanka by the Indian intelligence service, RAW, were not shared with the prime minister and some of his key ministers, according to claims. And it seems like Islamic State recognised this vulnerability, this confusion in politics, and opportunistically sorted out. The other factor, apart from the contextual factor in Sri Lanka, is that it appears that the attacks were carried out largely by an extended family network who likely mostly communicated face-to-face, didn't use digital communications. There must have been some use of digital communications and international connections, but on the ground, they were probably guided and instructed to not use digital communications, and that makes it much harder for intelligence services to pick up their planning, even though what they were doing was months in planning and very audacious.
Now, the events also brought the Maldives into the picture as a regional hub of Islamist activism, because it's near to Sri Lanka and it's also a tourist destination. How dangerous would it be to visit there? I don't think most people have thought of the Maldives before this as a dangerous place.
Look, it has to be said that Islamic State, I mean, the lesson from what happened over the Easter weekend in Sri Lanka is Islamic State is opportunistically looking out for opportunities to extend its global insurgency wherever there's political instability and vulnerability and where it has people in the local population with some grievance who've had some reason to be connected with Islamic State movement. It will try and act. And so places like Maldives are exactly the sort of place where it may try and act. Maldives, of course, historically has always been a crossroads on maritime highway, it continues to have a lot of people flowing through it. In recent years, it's come under extremist Salafist influence, not necessarily violent, but it has meant that some people from Maldives have travelled to Syria to fight with Islamic State, and there's a degree of porousness that's inherent to an archipelago nation of really small atolls, where there's a long history of small boats moving between those atolls and between the Indian mainland and the island of Sri Lanka. So those are all factors that facilitate that, and it does mean that we should be concerned now about places like Maldives.
Have you been surprised yourself, as someone who watches this kind of situation all the time, were you surprised to hear what happened in Sri Lanka?
Yeah, it was shocking and surprising. It's one of those things, of course, when you look in hindsight, when you become aware of the intelligence picked up by the Indian intelligence services and passed on to the Sri Lankans, that actually this should have been foreseeable and preventable, but it still came as a terrible shock.
It's just been revealed this afternoon that one of the terrorists involved in the attacks studied in Australia. Was that a surprise?
It's a shock. It's not really a surprise when you think about it. it shouldn't be surprising that terror networks like Islamic State will exploit those otherwise benign and very welcome networks that come through education. The fact is they're targeting middle-class kids, not because they're in the grip of some sort of great social crisis, but because they're open to this argument about global injustice and Islamic State being the ones who will provide the answer.
How does this change world security? Is it going to mean further tightening?
It does mean that, unfortunately, we have to look again at security. And for nations who had said, well, it's not our problem, it's not going to happen to us, really need to stop and consider if this group, the Islamic State, is looking cynically and opportunistically to exploit weakness and levels of denial, then it behooves us all to sort of stop and say, well, where's that possible? One country that springs to mind at the moment is Malaysia. It's also, like Sri Lanka, a popular tourist spot. It has a lot of international flows, not just for tourism, but also for business from the larger Muslim world. And there has been a history of radicalization. So in our neighborhood, places like that, and that's by no means the only place, India itself continues to be a concern, in Bangladesh, Central Asia, as well as South Asia and Southeast Asia, there are ongoing opportunities for Islamic State to reach out. It already has recruits. It will be tempted to try and operationalise them if it can fly beneath the radar in the way they did in Sri Lanka.
That's Greg Barton, Professor of Global Islamic Politics at Deakin University.